This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a family is falsely identified as terrorist, and a woman sues her doctor over comments about her weight. Joining us from our New York bureau, E.R. Shipp, columnist at the New York Daily News. She's joined there by Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. And George Curry joins us. He is editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. He joins us from Maryland. All right, folks, want to get right into a very interesting situation that happened on the Fox News show Inside Scoop with John Loftus. Mr. Loftus gave the address of a family that he said, in fact, were terrorists. They were allegedly linked to groups responsible for the July 7 bombing in London. We should note that Mr. Loftus, while hosting that show, is a former federal prosecutor. But here's the interesting rub there. While there had seemingly been people who lived there with ties to terrorism, they had since moved out at least 3 years ago. And now the family that lives currently in the home has been bombarded, as one might imagine, by threats and other situations that they face now. Obviously, this was a huge blunder by Mr. Loftus, and Fox News has suggested that they are reprimanding him. But George Curry, when you see this, does this speak yet again, as we've discussed many times on this program, as to where journalism is today?
I think more so it speaks of where hysteria is regarding to this whole war on terrorism. The information was wrong. The people had moved out 3 years ago, and even so, they had not been committed, convicted of anything, so we don't know to the extent, if any, that they had ties to London. They believe they do, but we're not sure about that itself. So it caused all kind of problems when the people are saying they got to call home every 30 minutes to see whether their kids are all right. It's just irresponsible, it's poor, it's inexcusable, and it's all that. But I'm not so much as sure there's a comment on journalism as much as it is on our whole euphoria about the war on terrorism.
I think it does say something about journalism. Too readily do we go on air or into print with information that has not been vetted. That used to be a hallmark of journalism. That was our whole purpose, is to gather information, sort through it, and then put in to the society's hearing and reading opportunities that which we figured was the best truth we could tell at the time. It's not enough for Loftus to say, quote, mistakes happen, end of quote. That's definitely not good enough.
Yeah, I agree. And in full disclosure, I work for the New York Post, which is owned by the same company that owns Fox News. That said, I think it is, well, first of all, Loftus, as you mentioned at the top, is a former prosecutor. He does not have a journalism background. I think it behooves Fox, if they're going to have that gentleman on the show, he has to. There's a certain standard he has to meet in terms of giving out information. If I come on the show and give some information here, Ed has a certain amount of assurance that this is something that I know, and if it turns out to be completely false and has turned out to be embarrassing to him, I would imagine I wouldn't be invited back. And I think, frankly, that should be what Fox should do in this case.
Well, you
know,
that says something else. Nowadays, there's so many outlets, particularly broadcast outlets, mm-hmm. that need to fill their 24 hours, they're picking up just about anybody to be on air, to be commentators, or to even serve the role as quote-unquote reporter, and they have no training, they don't follow any particular standards that we adhere to, and that said something again about where the business is going.
And how is it that Loftus never notified the local authorities about this if he had this information instead of just blurting it out on TV? It's just bizarre.
And Shipp, that's why I'm saying this has nothing to do with journalism. I don't consider these people journalists. It's the same kind of problem you have with, not exactly, but a similar problem you have with Armstrong Williams. You do have these talking heads. They're not journalists. And this is not just a course of news gathering. Generally, these people are not even involved in news gathering.
Right.
Well, at the same time, that you can make legitimate criticism about our industry.
Right. The public, though, doesn't always understand that distinction between
yeah, you're right.
the person who is the journalist and the person who's on air as an Armstrong Williams or any other people we can think of who are serving many masters, and journalism is not its foremost one.
All right, we're going to continue to talk about issues and questions about journalism with a flap that we're hearing out of Chicago, the Windy City, and this has to do with a favorite of the world's, that's Ms. Oprah Winfrey. And we should note that tomorrow we're going to have the man at the center of the storm on with us, who is often on the round table. That's Roland Martin, who is editor of the Chicago Defender. He wrote a column criticizing Ms. Winfrey for not showing up at John Johnson's funeral. Johnson, of course, the trailblazing editor of and creator of Ebony and Jet magazines, and a stalwart in the African American community, and a great patriot and American. That being said, Ms. Winfrey later, after reading the column, let Mr. Martin know specifically that she had sent Ms. Wright, or I'm sorry, Ms. Johnson, and also his daughter, Linda Rice Johnson, notes of sorrow, of sympathy, etc., and had contacted the family. She just happened to be in, I believe, Hawaii at the time, and was unable to get back to the funeral, according to Ms. Winfrey. George Curry, when you have someone going after a noted person like Oprah Winfrey, is that fair game without finding out why, in fact, she had not attended? And isn't it Ms. Winfrey's prerogative, albeit someone who obviously deserves saluting, if you will, to attend or not attend?
Well, let's first of all, for the record, note that Roland said he had made 6 telephone calls, and I'm sure that he'll tell you tomorrow. That's what he said in his column. And so he concluded that, you know, we didn't get a return call. The information he had was, you know, that maybe she was there. It did turn out that she was in Hawaii. And, yeah, it's kind of unfair standing in a way, but I think that grew out of a disappointment on the part of a lot of people that the people that John H. Johnson had helped make star, helped make them become stars, did not show up at the funeral. And so I think there was a frustration with that, a frustration with the amount of coverage that the white-owned press gave this as well. And so I think that first came out of that frustration, but still you need to be accurate, and apparently Roland didn't know she was in Hawaii.
You know, I think the biggest star that they had at Mr. Johnson's funeral was Diane Carroll. There were many people who could have been there, and I would argue should have been there, to honor his passing. And I agree with George that a lot of the frustration was that John Johnson died and did not receive the kind of attention that a person who had contributed so much to this country should have received. So part of the frustration is with the mainstream media, which we sometimes call the white media. But then part of the frustration is that within the black community, he was not remembered.
I would say that I think that's true. I will point out that the New York Post editorial page had an obituary editorial in Mr. Johnson's honor. I think that in the context of obviously Oprah Winfrey having become the wealthiest black celebrity in the nation in the journalism broadcasting business, clearly following Mr. Johnson's footsteps, I'm assuming Roland felt that she, of all people, should be held to a particular higher standard. Particularly if you think about at the beginning of the summer, the Oprah Winfrey story was about her being dissed at Hermes and so forth, and she's talking about the fact that she wants to make that a big part of her show when she comes back. So I can certainly understand where Roland was coming from.
Well, we'll hear from Roland Martin tomorrow. We should note, though, that Ms. Winfrey has already announced that she's going to give a tribute as her new season starts to John Johnson. We should also note the Hermes flap that we talked about, lest we forget the tribute that she gave to black women over the summer that was highly covered. And we should also note that among others at the funeral were Tom Joyner, President Clinton, and many others, but I think the lack of celebrity, particularly considering that, as George pointed out, many were made by Ebony and Jet magazine.
And
when I say celebrity, I mean entertainers.
You kind of want to compare it to, say, Johnny Cochran's funeral earlier, or Luther Vandross's funeral.
Or Ossie Davis's funeral.
Ossie Davis's funeral. People showed up. And I think
compounding this was, this is about the same time Peter Jennings died, and so they were able to contrast that coverage with John H. Johnson's coverage.
Right.
Well, and certainly the coverage, as we already suggested in mainstream media, is something that I think we all could agree was not just for a man of Mr. Johnson's stature. All right, we'll move on and take a look at information coming out of a Pentagon task force, and that is that we are still finding abuse in military schools. Some years ago, of course, there were a number of investigations going on at the Air Force Academy and the Naval Academy as well. One had hoped to after this panel took a look, would see a different environment, but the suggestion is there is still a culture that devalues the role of women in uniforms within these venerable institutions. E.R. Shipp, is this of any surprise to you?
It's surprising in the numbers of incidences of harassment, sexually and verbally, of women. But it's not shocking that men in that kind of environment will try to take advantage of women. Now, remember that in these academies, there's always a certain amount of hazing, and you have to jump through all kinds of hoops to prove your worthiness. I think it's likely that some of the males take advantage of that tradition and also take advantage of their own ignorance and abuse women. So I think I read something like 50% of women in the academies have reported some form of abuse.
I think that's true. However, I would caution to say that it should be kind of be. I think I would like to know exactly what they mean by harassment and what they mean by abuse, because clearly what happened at the Air Force Academy was totally horrific in terms of the number of out and out sexual assaults and rape and so forth. Those type of actions, that physical actions, you don't have that level at the Army and the Navy. Now, is it the verbal stuff may be going on, and that's certainly inappropriate, but I think we should try and be clear as to exactly what we're talking about.
Well, the Pentagon study, the 50% figure that ER talks about, it was all three academy. They said most of it was, they said verbal. They really should mean oral, since verbal can be written or spoken, to be technical.
Actually, I think verbal is probably better than saying oral, actually, George.
Hold on. That's where your mind is gone. Basically, they were saying that most of it was oral harassment. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about here a culture that devalues women. And it's been a problem there, as it is in society, for a long time. And you have the small numbers as well, with 15% only being female. And so the question becomes, how do they implement these recommendations? They've had recommendations before saying, you know, increase the number of instructors, close the door to hearing, protect the women's identity, these kinds of things. But we've had these kind of recommendations before, and we haven't seen anything done.
It is not,
George,
it's not
you raise an interesting point there, and that's the question of society's view of all of this. We can look at this as a microcosm, if you will. Though we don't like to talk about it, there is still, among many, women included, the idea that the military is no place for women.
Oh,
well,
please.
You have this proof.
That's the truth, ER. You don't have to agree with it, but
there is
that.
I know, but I'm saying Iraq should prove that point to be false. Look at all the women who are serving in Iraq, who have died in Iraq, and even though they didn't go in necessarily to be frontline troops, they are serving the same role.
But
as
that
those
still,
frontline
but
troops.
That still doesn't. That doesn't. That still doesn't change the cultural sensibility.
Right.
The cultural sensibility, and I think that's what Ed was speaking to. That there still is a cultural sensibility, even if you see women dying. In fact, even especially when you start seeing women dying, people start thinking that women should not be on those front lines.
But nor should men be on those front lines.
But the thing. Okay, well, but the warrior mentality is part of man, unfortunately.
Stay with the point, and that's exactly what I'm talking about, Robert George. The idea, and you can take this to police force, you can take this, quite frankly, to sports, you can take
departments.
Absolutely, and there is still this societal thought by many ER, not saying it's right or wrong in that sense, but just that it is in fact here, that there are still an idea that women should not have these jobs, that many men who stand beside them don't feel quite as comfortable as if there were another man there. And we don't like to talk about
this. And it's not necessarily, it's not always the case that it's that they hate women or they dislike women. Part of the concern that those who have always have always objected to this is often that the male instinct to want to protect the woman next to them actually is going to, it may actually cause a breakdown in just automatic esprit de corps. Whether it's fair or not, that's often the thought.
I don't buy that one at all. I mean, what about the woman's need to protect her offspring so she might have the same kind of feeling, the need? It probably helps the esprit de corps if they're all looking after each other's back.
I think beyond that, what we're talking about is this whole peer loyalty thing that discourages reporting. You're not supposed to rat on somebody. And whether that's the police department or these military academies, that's a central problem as well.
Again, as I said, I would like to have seen a further breakdown because once again the level of physical assaults and rape that you had at the Air Force Academy has never been reported at that level of the other two.
I agree with
that. Well, we can be assured that we still do not have all of what we probably should know, and further investigation is needed. There are a couple of issues that we promised you we didn't get to today, but we will certainly get to them as the week progresses. ER, Ship, Robert George Curry, thanks very much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.